the annual commemoration of the raid on Deerfield, historical reenactors stay away from staging a mock battle. They say they want to inform rather than sensationalize and answer questions about Native and colonial life. Each year, it's not unusual to find a visitor who claims to be related to one of the Deerfield captives, like 11-year-old enthusiast Andrew Bowe.
My mother and I found a book, The Boy Captive of Deerfield, in the library. So we took it home and we read it, and we learned a lot about this. And we read about John Stebbins and Thankful Stebbins, and my mother said, "Stebbins, we're related to them."
Indeed, one of the legacies of the raid on Deerfield is the crossing of cultural boundaries. Many captives, including Thankful Stebbins, stayed in Canada and married into Native or French families.
I was talking to somebody who said, "Well, to me, it's a story about how you can't go home again."
Alice Nash is assistant professor of Native American Studies at the University of Massachusetts.
And I would read it in completely the opposite way. I think it's a story about how you can have many homes.
Nash considers this interrelatedness one of the legacies of 1704.
You find Native people who would adopt children, the children go back, and they come back and visit. There are relationships that form, that connect these different communities, and that's just what I think is really important about this story.
A new opera, The Captivation of Eunice Williams, uses the captive story as a springboard into an epic journey.
I think the story is a great mythical story in a way that even transcends its time and place.
For librettist Harley Erdman, the raid on Deerfield was rife with emotional overtones, such as the fear that gripped the town before the attack.
It conveys the kind of sense of isolation, loneliness, fear. The snows are drifting up, the snows are drifting up, the snows are drifting up around our hearts.
What about the outcome of the raid? Historian Kevin Sweeney says that for Governor Vaudreuil and the French in Canada, it was a successful raid.
To inflict damage on the English, to cause the English to expend large amounts of money to defend their frontiers, that was clearly regarded as a victory.
But ultimately, Sweeney says it was an unsuccessful strategy.
It's clear that after the attack on Deerfield, the French aren't as successful. The English are much better prepared. So Deerfield in some ways is the last big raid against a New England town. There'll be smaller ones, but I think most historians would say this ultimately leads to the fall of New France, you know, the conquest of Canada by the English.
Historian Marge Bruchac says that the raid was a remarkable display of cooperation between many disparate groups.
It's sort of a last-ditch event where people from the valley, Abenaki from the north, Huron from Wendake, Ganawage Mohawk, and French all together try to reclaim what was traditional homeland for the Pecumtuk people.
But it was unsuccessful in reclaiming that land. Even the attempt to slow aggressive English expansion into territories throughout the northeast was only momentary. And most of the survivors of the raid stayed to rebuild Deerfield. The fallout from the raid on Deerfield was felt over generations. Native communities were pushed further and further into diaspora, and the offspring of the captives who stayed in Canada were fully integrated into either French or Native societies. In August of 1837, a group of Abenaki Indians from Quebec canoed, as they often did, down the Connecticut River to the outskirts of Deerfield. This time, the local Gazette and Mercury paper took notice.
"Our people were thrown into a state of considerable emotion last Monday evening and Tuesday by the encampment of a body of Indians from Canada. They're of the St. Francis tribe in Canada, and are descendants of Eunice Williams, daughter of Reverend John Williams, who, it will be recollected, was with his family carried captive when Deerfield was destroyed in 1704.
Eunice Williams, John Williams, 1704, a full 133 years earlier, but a date nonetheless that many knew well. Marge Bruchac.
Now, the Deerfield residents, when they see this group at first, they're startled. They're not sure whether they believe them, but it becomes clear over the time as they stay in the village and visit that this is indeed Eunice's granddaughter.
An Abenaki Indian with English ancestry, the granddaughter of Eunice Williams, was now likely in her 90s. The group was invited to attend a church service in Deerfield. And as Eunice's descendants sat in the congregation, a sermon was delivered by the Reverend John Fessenden. Historian John Demos.
The sermon is all about healing, I think, and about closure. It's about how to understand something which had initially seemed so perplexing and troubling and really fundamentally upsetting in a way that was finally about reconciliation.
Bruchak sees Fessenden's attempt at reconciliation in a different light.
He can only say something like that because Deerfield now has complete control of what was once Pecumtuk territory. And so there's an undercurrent that I read in that sermon that says, we know who you are and we acknowledge you and we welcome you, we respect you. But when you leave, this will still be our home.
And 300 years later, in 2004, this history is still raw for many. Neighboring East Hampton recently canceled ceremonies commemorating a similar attack on their town after a small group of Native American activists demanded that a greater Native perspective be represented. The history of 1704, like so many histories, is continually being rewritten. Historians will continue to uncover new information that adds depth and shape to the multiple perspectives that are more visible today. And the themes of the raid, border crossing, cultural assimilation, and territorial rights will likely remain integral to the American discourse for years to come. For WFCR, I'm Susanna Lee.